You're listening to Between the Reads, a bi-weekly podcast that shines a spotlight on books by new and recently published authors. I'm your host, Audra Russell. Are you looking for a good read? Tired of being disappointed by trending books that don't live up to the hype? Maybe you're an aspiring author and feel like giving up on your writing? Stay tuned, book lovers and writers alike. This show is for you. Trish Ajel Roberts is a blogger, self-actualization coach, yoga and meditation instructor, Reiki practitioner, retreat organizer, and founder of Black Vegan Life and Honey Butterflies Wellness and Transformation. She was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and attended Stuyvesant High School in Manhattan. She holds a bachelor's degree from the Metropolitan College of New York and an MBA from Long Island University. She has 10 years of Buddhist study at Kadampa Meditation Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and 20 years of yoga experience. She is the author of the self-help memoir, Thinking Outside the Chrysalis, A Black Woman's Guide to Spreading Her Wings, the novel Chocolate Soufflé, and a contributing writer for Natural Awakenings Atlanta. She lives with her daughter and their dog in Metro Atlanta. She is available as a life coach, motivational speaker, and plant-based retreat organizer, and has a weekly inspirational blog at honeybutterflies.com. Trish, welcome to Between the Reads.
Thank you. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Yes, me too. If I can get my tongue right, I think I need another cup of coffee.
All of my stuff is too complicated. I'm like, okay. Clearly, I didn't have like a marketing master put together the name of my business or my name or any of that stuff. So
yeah, girl, my tongue. I've had what I think two cups. I may have maybe one. I can't remember. See, that's why I need another cup of coffee.
But it all comes from the heart, so it's all good.
Yes, ma'am, it does. So let's get right into this book, Thinking Outside the Chrysalis, which I loved. I have it on my Kindle, but I think I'm going to have to buy the hard copy for this because I loved it that much. Yes.
I'm glad you loved it.
I did. So why don't you tell our readers what this book is about and how you came to write it?
Yeah, so first of all, I realize a lot of people don't know what a chrysalis is. So a chrysalis is basically a butterfly cocoon. Mm-hmm. And the book was really about breaking out of how we were maybe programmed to thinking our lives are supposed to be. Okay. So I know for me, I grew up in a family where, you know, you got an education, you got on a certain track, and you just kind of followed the path that was set for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, depending on how that works for you, maybe it's great. But I think for a lot of people, we reach a point where we're like, is this really it? What's my purpose? You know, mm-hmm. am I really fulfilled? Mm-hmm. Am I using all my talents? Mm-hmm. So it's really my story of how I achieved that in my own life as an encouragement for other people to do the same. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, it didn't start out as a book, really. It was kind of funny how it happened. I was I was planning a plant-based retreat out mm-hmm. here about an hour outside of Atlanta. It was supposed mm-hmm. to take place the spring of 2020. Mm-hmm. So we know that that got canceled, right?
Right.
but in the, like everything else, right?
Right,
but in
right.
the process of putting the retreat together, I decided to name the retreat Thinking Outside the Chrysalis. Because mm-hmm. I was like, wow, you know, in order to kind of have these breakthroughs in our lives, you have to be able to imagine it in your mind first. So what a wonderful way to approach the concept for the retreat. Right. And then I decided I wanted to create a handbook or a book for the participants. Mm-hmm. So that was how that started. And then I woke up in the middle of the night, like around, I don't know, this is usually when I wake up if I'm doing something weird. It's like around 3 or 3:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I had these 10 ideas that just came into my head. I was like, oh my gosh, I got to write them down. Uh-huh. So that was the first 10 drops, or what I call drops of wisdom or nectar in the book. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it expanded to the 12. But yeah, it started off as a retreat. But one of the nice things that I like to say in the story as well, in the book, mm-hmm. is that I could have been mad that the retreat didn't happen. But I've learned to just kind of flow with it. I'm like, okay, universe, we're not doing a retreat. What are we doing?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then it turned into something that I think is so much more delicious and so much more exciting than a single.
Yes, and retreat. Something we can go back to over and over again.
Yeah.
So it's something tangible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
You can reach a much wider range of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to jump to one of my other questions, because you talked about calling the chapters drops. So how did that come about? You say these are drops of wisdom, but what made you say, okay, I'm going to name these drops instead of chapters?
You know, I've always been fascinated with the butterfly story of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always been so beautiful to me. Mm-hmm. And so once I started use, and I love metaphors. I could metaphor you all day long. So once I started with the chrysalis, I was just like, okay, I started trying to get into the butterfly's head. I was like, okay, what do they eat? You know, I'm like Googling, what do they eat? I'm like, oh, they eat nectar.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they do, because they're so brilliant, you know, like,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Then I thought, okay, you know, we need nourishment, right? We don't just consume food. We consume ideas and mm-hmm. movies and televisions and mm-hmm. conversations like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to put that a drop of nectar, you know?
Mm-hmm. 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 There you go. There you go. Now, you said the book is an unapologetic love letter to Black women. Now, tell us, I personally know, I think I know why, but tell us why you chose to focus on the sisters.
Well, first of all, because I am.
Right.
I know the struggle. I also grew up one of four girls.
Okay.
My family, so it was a house full of girls. And I've always been like, I don't know, I've always just been like a sister girl. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I've always loved my girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up with like any kind of haterate, you know, kind of around women.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. But then mm-hmm. also, as I've gotten older and I've had more experiences, like mm-hmm. we just have so much stuff. You know, we have to put up with so much stuff.
Right.
That I feel that we have... you know, we need a special kind of love,
mm-hmm.
and some things that I wanted to talk about are specific to us,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to have to, you know, make everything for everyone. You
right.
know, I wanted to be able to speak directly to Black women,
mm-hmm.
although, you know, lots of white women have read the book and they love it, because
mm-hmm.
the teachings are powerful. But the
right.
funny thing that happened, too, was that with everything going on in 2020 with race
mm-hmm.
and all of this,
mm-hmm.
People of other races who have read the book have said, oh, my God, it really helped me to understand
mm-hmm.
Black
mm-hmm.
women,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a way that we maybe are not normally perceived, you know. So
right.
so that was kind of a
as
nice
something
surprise.
Other than an angry Black woman. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Although, listen. I used to be pretty
angry. And we're going to get to that, too. Yes, yes, yes.
I feel you. But it's just like, you just get tired.
Yeah, you do get tired. You do get tired. It's, you know, I mean, that living in this country, shit. It's like, you know what? Can I just have a day where I wake up and I can just be, and I don't have to worry about watching where I go and watching what I
right.
say, and I can't, you know, be myself and speak in colloquialisms without everybody thinking that's, you know, I'm ignorant or that's the way all Black.
Right.
I mean, can I just be? Can I just be? And it's right. exhausting. It's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It is exhausting.
Yes, absolutely. Now, one of the things I love about the book is at the end of each chapter, you give songs that you call Grooves for Fluttering.
Yes.
And you also give movies and documentaries and books that can help along the journey. And I love that you put Ndiaye in there, because that is my twin spirit. I cannot tell you how many times her songs, I have all of her albums, and her songs just carry me, and her lyrics just,
mm-hmm.
they're like a balm to your spirit. I love
And not for nothing. I could have made every song Ndiaye, but
oh
I was like,
God,
okay.
Oh my God, yes.
I was like, okay. We can't make every song Ndiaye, because her stuff is so,
it's
spiritual
moving.
And so
mm-hmm.
uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And it really made me appreciate her more, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of artists are not giving us that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to find, you know, a good kind of collection of different genres and different time periods.
I'd have been all Indian, unapologetic about it. Just get India's albums, all of them. We just gonna listen to them all.
I do not disagree with that. I don't like it. India, if you're listening, you need to call me.
Yes,
I've been trying
we
to
are your
you.
Songbird, girl. You got two of your songbirds over here. Yes.
Exactly.
So why did you feel it was important to put these types of resources at the end of each chapter?
You know what? It popped up. I think I was doing like a meditation class one day. Uh-huh. And it just popped in my head. Like sometimes I really feel like, you know, some say God, some say the universe, spirit, mm-hmm. whatever you call it. I have mm-hmm. those moments where it just comes to me. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, I learn better when it's something that I'm engaged in, mm-hmm. when it's active. Mm-hmm. And I just think that when you're immersed, it makes it makes the learning easier, you know. Mm-hmm. So like if you're, say, you're working on being more peaceful and you're mm-hmm. meditating, and then you go and you listen to nothing against trap music, right?
Right.
It's trap music all night.
Girl, you know, I love the trap music now.
Girl, me too. I'm just saying, you know, you might want to support your, you know, personal journey with some other options.
So what you're saying is Lean Back by Terror Squad is not going to help me, right?
I took a yoga class not too long ago at the studio that I go to out here, and I was like all zen, and I'm floating mm-hmm. out the class, and it was mm-hmm. like, you know, it was great. And then this guy who was in the class with me, he uh-huh. comes outside, he gets on the phone, he's like, fuck you, and does that. And I was like, whoa.
Oh, wow. Okay. Like, we totally lost the whole zen thing here, huh?
Yeah, so we need like kind of a little blanket to wrap ourselves around in, so that we're not getting messages from one place, you know, that you can learn in different media.
Right, mm-hmm. absolutely. So this book was really a sort of an ode to mental health for Black women. In a lot of ways. So share to us why you feel mental health is important, especially now.
Ooh, I mean, you know, it's so funny because mental health is like kind of a catchphrase now. Because for so many years, people acted like we didn't have mentals, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like we didn't have anything in our head that we needed to keep healthy. We're just like, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Right. Keep it moving.
Yeah, you know, and then, and I don't know, like growing up in my family or whatever, you know, you always had like an aunt who was touched or this one who was a little bit, you know, but there was just never a conversation about what was really going on with people.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, to me, that's where everything resides. That's where your mm-hmm. peace resides, where your happiness mm-hmm. resides. You know, mm-hmm. you could be in a big old house with all the money and all the jewels and the whole world mm-hmm. loving you and mm-hmm. be miserable because you just mm-hmm. don't have it in your head or in your heart, mm-hmm. you know, to really mm-hmm. feel joy and to feel good about yourself.
Right.
So I guess I was thinking of a space of really joy and fulfillment,
mm-hmm.
but those things are, they come from mental health, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I think of spiritual health as well. Mm-hmm. To me, the mental is my mind, the spiritual is more my heart. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's an inside job, you know?
Right.
It's all internal.
Right.
And it requires some work, you know? We don't mm-hmm. just, I think maybe we get a little bit of a roadmap of what to do with our physical bodies,
mm-hmm.
you know, get married, have kids, go to school, something like that.
Right.
But as far as our internal selves,
yeah,
we don't really get so much direction. So,
mm-hmm. and when you look at it like that too, I mean, it's like, you know, that's where we operate from too. That's how we the lens we view the world through. That's how we make our decisions from all of our, you know, things that are going on mentally and in our hearts, whether it comes from trauma or whether it comes from good experiences. And, you know, one of the things that I realized that was powerful for me was where you talked about in the book how you were in your little VW bug and got hit from behind by an 18-wheeler. Mm-hmm. And how this man proceeded to lie and say that you were changing lanes.
Isn't that ridiculous?
And then, girl, because that's what I would have been in my, I'd have been in my anger moment. Like, no, man, this redneck plowed into me, one pain. I'd been in my anger and everything. But you decided to step back, you know, from this man who had two teeth and, you know, his little confession sack.
You know, I honestly, I had compassion. Mm-hmm. I'll even tell you a little story. I had to have a filling in my front tooth the other day. And I know, between my teeth. But I was like, wait a minute. Are people going to see this? And
right.
He was like, well, I'll try. I was like, what do you mean you're going to try?
Like, nah, you got to make it look like the same as it was when I came in here.
Right. I was freaking out. And so I'm like, you know, if I see someone who's missing a front tooth, I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. my God. I mean, mm-hmm. no matter how they might perceive me, maybe they hate me. But right. I'm still thinking, my goodness.
Right.
Right. I'm great. You know, sometimes you just got to be grateful for little things.
Mm-hmm. And you chose to come to a place of compassion and try to understand that this man might need his job and all that. So, you know, that's what I'm talking about, is that, you know, it helps you when you can get a hold of, you know, your mental health and your spiritual health. It really kind of helps you operate differently and raise your vibration, as you said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not for nothing. I mean, listen, police is scary for Black people. I've mm-hmm. always felt that way. Mm-hmm. I believe in self-preservation. Mm-hmm. You know, the mm-hmm. officer that I interacted with was very strange. Mm-hmm.
Right.
He might have been going to some of those meetings, you know, that they have right. in the middle of the night with the tiki yeah. torches.
With yeah, and the pillowcases over their heads. I yes. feel you.
Yeah. You know, I'm yes. like, and they can do and say anything they want to.
Right.
You could mm-hmm. tell me something's in my car. You know, so yeah.
Right.
I'm glad that I've been on this journey for mm-hmm. long enough that it would take a lot to get me off kilter, you know. Mm.
See, I'm still getting there, sis. I'm good for a little bit, but then, you know, I'm just, there are certain things you're not gonna do to me, and I'm gonna operate all in that anger and be like, no, that's just,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, the thing
I'm
is,
getting there. I'm getting there. I'm trying.
But the thing is that I understand, like, there's kind of an exhilaration sometimes to the anger. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, does it benefit me, you know, right. or does it benefit us? And right. that's kind of, you know, if it's not benefiting me and mm-hmm. I can learn something else, mm-hmm. then, girl, that was the best thing I ever learned in my life. And I didn't,
right.
I didn't even know it was a thing. I was like, is that a thing? Like, I don't have to be pissed when people act crazy.
Yeah, see, I'm sure if my husband could hear this right now, he'd be like, mm-hmm, you got a lot to learn, because, you know, I'm from Jersey originally. I'm in Maryland now, but I was raised in Jersey, so I go from nice to Jersey in about 0.0003 seconds.
Well, girl, you're not from Brooklyn, so.
You see, so you understand. So, like I said, you have evolved, and I'm working on getting there.
But
I'm not there yet. I'm working on it, because, like, I had an incident the other day where I was at the Walmart and I was going to my car, and these, you know, this old woman and this old man, they parked next to me, and she's getting out the passenger side. She's got a cane, so I'm waiting patiently. I'm like, okay, this sister, you know, she's struggling. So, you know, I'm just waiting by my car, by the back end of my car. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, you know, I'm Black, so she feels threatened. And what are you staring at, girl?
What?
And I was like, now see, I didn't, you, I failed the whole outside the chrysalis thing. Cause I was like, I'm staring at you because you're in my way and I'm trying to get in my car and I'm not a little girl. And, you know, and her.
This is in Maryland?
Yeah. Oh, girl, they, I'm in Glen Burnie too. So they, you know, I live in the land of pickup trucks and Confederate flags. Like they are in my neighborhood. See? See that grumble? That's.
No, I know. You know, well, listen, I keep talking about leaving and never coming back.
So, yeah, girl.
I'm going to Ghana.
Yes.
In a few weeks.
Oh, take me with you, please. Take me with you.
I'll bring everybody.
My husband and I, that is like our ultimate. We want to visit Africa. We were supposed to be for my 50th birthday in August, but of course, you know, this damn Rona. That didn't happen. But we're going to get there, but I'm scared I'm not going to come back.
That's okay. I was telling my friend, because I've been telling her, I'm like, listen, we could just go live in Africa for a year. We don't have to commit to the rest of eternity. You know what
right.
I mean? But I'm sure that I will have retreats in Africa at some point, probably in Ghana. So I will let you know.
Yeah. Well, because my husband and I have already said that, because we watch someone on YouTube who goes before COVID, he would go regularly to refresh his spirit. And we said, we're going to start doing that. We're going to start going to Africa regularly to refresh our spirits, because over there he was like, the guy on YouTube, he was like, you know, my blood pressure goes down, and you know, I'm just a man over there. I'm not a black man. I'm just a man, and I need to go over there and just be a woman.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
I always knew that this racism was here, but I don't know, maybe after a while I just started thinking I was a person. And you know, and then it always, you have somebody who gives you the look or does something to remind you that, no, you're not just a human. You're not just a person, you know.
Not here anyway. Not here anyway.
Yeah.
So you dropped so many nuggets throughout this book. My whole damn Kindle was highlighted. I got little notes.
I go back and reread my own stuff too. I feel like a lot of the book was channeled to me. Like I'm not really that smart. It just from a greater source.
Listen, this was you, sis. This was you. This was you. And it's brilliant. And I want to talk about one of these points that you brought up, which this one was a heavy hitter, that the American dream was never created with black people in mind. Please talk about that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because a lot of my pieces have been published other places as article excerpts. And at one of the publications, that specific line, the white woman, the editor, wanted me to change because she said it wasn't done with any of them in mind. And I said, oh, that's interesting that white people feel that way, because I thought expressly with them in mind. So
right. Right.
You know, but it was interesting just that, and I think we see it in this culture now where there's so much hatred, because it seems everybody is feeling alienated. You know, like the white people are feeling alienated. I'm like, what's going on? But so for me, I mean, that is expressly true for black people, though, right? This idea of the American dream was never something that was supposed to be attainable for us. And we know it now because we have all this information on, you know, redlining and how these housing projects were established, or, you know, charging black families more for mortgages.
Everything.
Everything. Really, credit, mortgages, everything.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the other thing too is, I think that, you know, some of these kind of ideas are sold to us. And I don't know that they're sold to us for our benefit, you know.
That's a whole nother show, though.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Because even the mortgage thing, you know, I worked as a financial advisor for a long time. And even the mortgage thing, you know, you got a bunch of people saying they own their homes. And it's like,
stop,
I don't think so. don't think you actually own your home.
Stop paying that mortgage and see what happens. And even when you pay the mortgage off, you still don't own that home because stop paying them taxes every
year. That's the
truth. And see what happens.
See what happens.
You're going to find out who owns that home for real.
Mm-hmm. Fast. Yeah.
Real fast. And it ain't going to be you. It's going to be the person that bought your home for pennies on the dollar to pay back the taxes that you didn't pay. So
See now, listen, I you know, I'm all zen and anger free and everything, but that is a pet peeve of mine. Property tax. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, it's terrible. Like, you could pay for a house for 50 years and then they can come through and say, well, you owe $3,000, so we're gonna auction that off on the court steps while you're living in it.
Exactly.
Like, oh my god,
right?
That's awful.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Biggest scam there is. Yep. So another point that you made was that anger isn't a real emotion, but rather a way of masking genuine feelings. Now, how did you come to that nugget of information? Because I was just like, that hit me hard. I was like, I don't know if I want to keep reading this book right now.
Well, you know, it's funny because I write in the book the first time I heard that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And it was probably a little article you tucked in your pocket and washed it in your jeans.
Girl, I told you I love a metaphor. I was like, I put that in the wash and forgot about it. But yeah, so I totally understand your feeling. I was like, what kind of mess is this?
I'm gonna be
angry about what I'm angry about. Mm-hmm. But then I think later on, it just, as I really looked at it, maybe when I was a little more mature, I couldn't deny the honesty in it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm ever angry, like say, you know, the guy with the lying on me in the truck or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm angry because it's unjust.
Mm-hmm.
I'm angry because I guess the word that's coming to my mind is that I'm being violated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hurt, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when that situation first happened, when we were waiting for the police, we were chatting about our kids and this and that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it might be painful. And a lot of times it's easier. It feels more empowering to be angry because anger gives you this sense of control, especially if you like, I'm going to whoop your ass. You know what I mean? I had a workout. I feel better, you know? You know, so anger gives us a sense of power, but it's really a false sense of power, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because suppose you do go down the whoop your ass
right
path, you know, now you gotta lose your job or now you gotta get arrested or, you know, that was not your best path, right? So, yeah, it can be tempting because it feels, you know, more empowering than dealing with how you really feel, which is pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I think that's how Black people deal with it. Cause, and this is just dropped into my little spirit just now. I think anger, especially for Black people, it makes it, like you said, it gives us this feeling of control that we don't really have. Like, we can at least, you know, respond to the violation and let people know that, you know, we're not the one, you know, and but it's not really, it's just a false sense of control, because really at the end of the day, what the person did to you is still done. Mm-hmm. And now, depending on how harshly you acted in your anger, now you've got a whole set of consequences, like you said,
and even
that
if
you have
internal
to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Even if you don't touch anyone, you just call all your friends and bitch, and then you sit somewhere and seethe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, now you've got high blood pressure. You ate a pint of ice cream. You drank a bottle of wine. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, well.
Right.
It didn't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part in the book where I say something like, our joy is the only thing that could not be stolen from us.
That's coming. That's coming. That's okay, coming. I'm getting to that. That's one of my little nuggets we're going to talk about.
Okay, okay. I mean, that's where the power is. You know, people be mad when you're really happy. They're like, she's so happy.
That. Right. Exactly. That's exactly. We're going to definitely get to that. So you talk about how Black people suffer, and it isn't just micro and macro aggressions against us that hinder us, but the fact that we're not allowed to live authentically. And that really, because, you know, whether it's our hair, whether it's, you know, we're constantly being policed to the point that we can't, like you said, live authentically. So explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our hair is illegal in some places, right?
Mm-hmm. Right? Make that make sense. I don't get it. I don't get it.
You know, for me, I worked corporate for so many years, and I was always conscious of how my nails looked, how my mm-hmm. jewelry looked, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, certain places, they will have rules on, you right. know, your hair and your jewelry, and it has to be mm-hmm. a certain way, your makeup. I always wanted locks, mm-hmm. and I thought, okay, I can't have locks because, well, I always understood locks. They have an ugly stage. I think we're better at doing them now, so I don't feel like,
right.
cause
right.
now, I don't feel like I went through an ugly stage. But even before I finally quit my last corporate job, I was going to put sister locks in my hair because I was like, okay, those little baby locks, they'll be okay with those. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I was
right.
still probably pressing outside the area most Black women feel comfortable going. Well, I shouldn't say most, maybe many. Yeah, so there's a lot of pressure for us to have long weaves or to have relaxers, you know. Yeah, we can't just get up and shake our hair.
Right.
I remember years ago hearing a woman who had interviewed, a white woman who had interviewed a Black woman for a job. And she was complaining about, I think her suit or her sweater or something was orange. Now, you know we like our orange. You better stop.
Right.
Because it looks good on our skin.
Exactly.
You know?
You're just mad because you can't wear it.
But so just even the colors of the clothes that you might wear, like they might feel orange is too garish or, you know, whatever. Whereas for us, you know, oranges and yellows and those kinds of colors, warmer colors are, you know, often more appealing. So,
yeah, and that goes back to that whole, it's like the audacity that you have to tell, where you think that it's your job to tell me how my hair should look and what color I should wear. As long as the suit is professional, what does it matter what color it is?
But even that, too, the, you know, they dictate the suit. You know, it's been interesting watching a lot of these companies move away from suits to more comfortable clothes. You know, I threw out all my suits. I was so excited. Well, I kept one really fly suit that I didn't. That was a whole nother kind of suit. It was just great. But, you know, I was at the bank for many years, and it was like, they didn't even want you in anything unless it was black or navy blue or gray.
Right.
So I really had this uniform. And I think they might have measured your earrings. Like, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I mean, you know, I guess I understand wanting to have whatever kind of professional appearance. But, you know, hair is just a big one for us.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, what if I said to you that your straight hair makes me uncomfortable? You know, that's not professional. I mean, how can they tell me that my hair coming out of my head the way it comes out of my head is not, because you're comparing it against your hair. That's always the thing that gets me.
Yeah. And, you know, as I've learned things over the years, what's really interesting is that, you know, darker skin is more protective. And hair that doesn't fall flat against your head it's more protective from sun and the elements. You know, I just think it's super beautiful. I put that in the book as well. I just think Black women and Black people are just super beautiful.
We are.
Yeah, we are.
We are. And that's why they hate us, because, you know, they ain't us. So they got to try and police everything. So, you know, that's a whole nother story.
Girl, that's a whole nother conversation.
Right? We could have a whole nother podcast about that.
Yeah, we sure could.
But, yes, ma'am.
But I did think it was interesting when I learned that, I mean, I guess we all know darker skin is protective because, you know, we tan, we don't burn. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For the most part, right? No.
Right.
But I never thought about our hair being protective. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it is. Mm-hmm.
You know? It sure is. It sure is. Absolutely. So you talked about vision boards, and I loved this because you said that they need to be authentic, but for some, they end up being craft projects that aren't really reflections of what we truly want. So, and I know you wrote this whole book about this, you know, about coming to our authentic selves, but how do you get to that space where you are visualizing what you actually want and what, and not what you think you should want?
Right. It was hard, you know, and part of the reason why I wrote this, I'm like, man, it took me 20 years to figure this stuff out. Maybe I could save somebody some time, you know?
Right. Okay.
So you don't have to spend 20 years on this. Oh. I mean, I think that, you know, books like this, I'm going to tell you guys too, I'm coming out with a journal as well that has more blank spaces to work through some of these things. But we have to spend some time with ourselves to figure out what we want. And if we never do it, we're never going to know who we are. We'll just be, you know, kind of a shell of what our parents told us we're supposed to be, combined with a shell of what our culture and our media told us we're supposed to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if your parents said, if you get a Mercedes, you're successful. And the media says, I don't know, if you get a Lexus, you'll be successful. And then you create a vision board and you put a Mercedes and a Lexus on it. Okay. But what do you want? Do you know what you, have you thought about what you want? You know, because what happens a lot of times is people get the Mercedes and then they're like, well, I'm still not happy. And it's like, well, you don't even know what you want. So how are you going to know when you get it?
Right. You know? Exactly. Exactly. And it's just, I mean, I remember the first time that I made a vision board and I just threw the thing away like a year ago, and it was sitting dusty behind my nightstand. And when I opened it to look at it, I was just like, it was like you said, it was the big bank account, it was the, you know, the bigger house, it was the fancy car. And when I look at it, I'm like, no wonder it didn't come to pass, because I mean, yeah, I want a little bit bigger house, but, and you know, of course everybody wants money, but that's not what I really wanted. I felt like I made that vision board because that's what I was supposed to make to impress people. And it wasn't really what I really wanted. So I think that was a really good thing that you talked about in the book, because, you know, we do make these vision boards, and especially if they're digital and they're accessible to the world, it's like there's that pressure that, well, what is somebody going to think about my vision board if it's not, you know, all about the grind and the hustle and having all the material things. So, I think there's a pressure there.
Both of those words, you know, the grind and the hustle.
Yeah, girl, I am not about the grind and hustle culture, okay? I just am not. I really just am not.
But what I was going to say with the vision board that's interesting is, okay, you want the money.
Right.
For what? Do you want it so that you feel safe? Or do you want it because, you know, you have projects that you want to do? Or is it just like the most basic security that you, you know, you have some place to live, you know, so what's that all about? Or like the, you know, I've talked about the Lexus or whatever before, like, is that so that other people think that you're successful? Is it because you like a really smooth ride, you know, or you plan it on just going a little bit deeper? But it requires time in a culture that tells us we don't have time.
Right. We don't have time. And you got to, you know, if you don't have this, this, and this, then you're not successful. You know, it's all about being defined by other. And I really, you know, I think vision boards, if you're not careful, that's why I, you know, people who, I guess if you want to share your vision board and you're strong in your vision board and you know that this is what you want because this is what you want, then no one's going to shake you from it. But if you're not really sure that this is what you want, or, you know, it's something that you've kept quiet, but you have people around you that are dream killers and you show them your vision board.
Yeah. That's a whole nother chapter, dream killers.
Right? It is a chapter. Y'all need to get this book. I'm telling you.
I actually blogged about that this week because I had a family member sent me a really nasty text saying things about my character. And I had to read it a couple times. And I said, you know what? If I didn't know who I was, mm-hmm. how upsetting would this be?
Right. You know?
And then I actually blogged some journal prompts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so you guys can access those things. Because, you know, you're right. You have to figure out who you are for your vision board, mm-hmm. right? Your vision for mm-hmm. the trajectory of your life to go someplace that you would like it to go. Mm-hmm. Somebody has a quote where it's like, if you don't know where you're going, any map will work or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yep. If you, I think it's like, if you don't know where you're going, any road will lead you there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually posted my vision boards. I don't know if you saw them. I mentioned it in the book that I was going to post.
I have not. I got to go and look at them.
So you could just see my hot messes. And then the current one, you know.
Right.
Well, what am I doing here? I have all these cars. I don't care about cars. I've been driving Beetles for years. I love my Beetles, you know. Uh-huh. Yes. And there wasn't even a Beetle on the vision board. Yeah. I guess I already had one. I don't know. It was just a bunch of stuff that I was just like.
Right.
Just
make sure when you're doing your vision board, y'all, you're doing it for you, not to impress people. And I would even recommend that when you create your vision board, keep it to yourself for a while and just sit with it and let it resonate with you. Is this what you really want? Because, you know, in the age of social media, we do everything for the gram, for Twitter, for Facebook, and try to create these perfect lives like we have it all together. And, you know, most of us really don't. We're different levels of together, you know, so we just get caught up in just being that, you know, the flawless hair, the flawless skin, the flawless body, you know, and I just
always tell people I'm just a person, you know, and I think that our flaws is what makes us beautiful. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to like have a best friend who's like a plastic Barbie doll.
Right.
You know, you want to have someone with some grit and some depth and, mm-hmm. you know, someone who's experienced some pain and some joy and, you know, taking some risk or,
mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
I don't know. I talk about the crisis of authenticity. Girl, I know you read that too.
I read the whole book from cover to cover. I sure did.
I
love it.
Good, I'm glad you. Even like with my daughter, you know, everybody's got these filters now. Mm-hmm. You know, and she'll put a filter on and she's a beautiful girl, but I'm like, why does she just put freckles on her face like randomly for like a reason?
Right.
You know?
Like, right.
I hardly see anybody without a filter. And when I met her boyfriend, I was like, gosh, he looks really young because he had a filter. Mm-hmm. So he had like no pores or and when I met him in person, I was like, oh, okay. You know, he's a nice looking young man.
Right, yeah.
It's crazy, this technology. But I didn't know that people were posting their vision boards. I mean, I've done it just because I've been writing about this stuff, but I don't think I've seen anybody else's.
Yeah, people have posted. I've seen, you know, on Pinterest and stuff like that, people put up their vision boards. And it's just like when I went to go do my initial vision board, I did research on how do you do vision board, and people mm-hmm. had up their digital vision boards for people to look at. And it's just like,
but as an example of how to do it, not as.
No, some were examples, some were people's actual vision boards, and they just struck me as not real. But that pressure is what made me create seeing all. I was like, well, my vision board was simple, but since all this is on here, I guess I need to up my vision board. And that's when I, you know.
Oh, Audrey,
yeah.
You're killing me.
Just saying.
She's like, wait a minute, that's a vision board competition. Well, I'm back on my vision board now. I'm selling myself short.
I did. I was like, I got to up my vision board game because I had all these simple things that resonated with me. I was like, up, scrap all this. I need to put the car on here and the big bank account on here and the big old house on here. And yeah, and I didn't even ascribe to it. It's just. Yeah,
I think so. It should be a stretch, though. You know, like I've had.
Yeah, a little bit. But like mine was completely inauthentic. It was like it was the people's vision board. It was the American dream vision board, and it wasn't my dream.
Right. Yeah. It should be your dream. But I think it should be your dream, you know, not your 6 month dream. Like at least your 5 year dream. You know?
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I might do another vision board today, but this time it's gonna be my real vision of what I want. Might have to do that.
Yeah. Because the real vision board work is not putting the vision board together. It's figuring out what you actually want.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And now that you've read my book, you should be all straight. You should know everything.
Listen, I have to go back and pick a drop and work on that drop. Yeah, clearly, you know I need to work on the anger one.
You know I'm joking because at the beginning, I'm like, okay, you could do a drop a week, a drop a month, a drop a year. You know, like you could really take one drop and be working on it for 5 years. Like the first one is healing. You know, or the anger. Mm-hmm. I mean, any of that, it takes
time.
It takes time.
Yep. I recommend everybody reading through the whole book once and then picking a drop to work on, you know, or picking pieces of multiple drops to, you know, to focus on, you know, like maybe healing and anger, because when you heal, there's definitely going to be some anger when you think about the things and you take time to process what you've been through. So, you know, but I recommend reading through the whole, because there's so many nuggets that you can take to begin, like, to begin your journey. So that's my recommendation. Read it all the way through and then pick a drop and work on that.
Yeah, so, I like that.
Yeah.
And I think most people have done that, have gone all the way through first.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So I'm going to be your therapist.
You can be my therapist. Oh, okay. Okay. Let me lean back. Okay.
Get in the chair. Just a little game we're going to play. I'm going to be your therapist. I'm going to give you a couple of pieces of advice from your book.
Okay.
And I want you to just tell me how they make you feel now.
Oh, this is like a game show. Go ahead.
Yep. So, you ready? Got your feet up?
I'm ready. Well, wait a minute. Let me stretch them out. My dog is here with me. He just looked at me like, okay, what are you doing?
Like,
are we going for a walk? No, we're not doing anything.
Okay. First piece of advice. Delays give us a chance to prepare for whatever's coming our way. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel great.
You're
but it's only
because
I wrote it. It's because I wrote it. That's why. Because I understand that. Like there've been so many times where I was like, I want this. I wanted the man or the job or the this, you know. And then you get it, and you're like, it's not what I thought it was going to be. You know. And then sometimes, like how the retreat didn't happen. I was like really not happy about that at the time.
Right.
But I said, you know what, if this is happening, it's happening for a reason. I'm going to lean back and see where this goes. And I think it went someplace more beautiful than I could have imagined. So.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, next piece.
Okay, I'm leaning back. My eyes are closed. I'm like, okay.
Okay. When we have a dream that hasn't yet come to fruition, we want it now.
How does that make me feel? like it's true, you know. I don't know. It's still like I have these big dreams for my company. You know, okay. I want to sell 1 million books this year.
All right, now.
You know, I'm like, listen, if I'm going to manifest, I'm going to make it good, right?
So, right.
I'm like, this year, I want to have retreat properties. I want to teach the 12 drops around the world. Mm-hmm. I don't know why Trevor Noah hasn't called me yet. You know, I'm waiting for, you know, I just keep imagining Oprah calling me like in the middle of the night. And I'm like, Oprah, you've got to stop calling me asking me to explain the fifth drop.
You waiting for Oprah to have you on her masterclass.
I'm like, I can't sleep, you know, call Deepak. I'm trying to get some rest. So. So, you know, while I say all of that, I know that I may not be ready for Oprah to call me at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, I probably have things that need to happen first before, you know. And, you know, we've seen people where they got a lot of attention really quickly and it did not work out so well. And then we've seen people where actually they've gotten attention over a long period of time. For some reason, I always think of Whitney Houston, God rest her soul. You know, and it seems like it could really be detrimental. So, yeah. So, I mean, we do want what we want when we want it. That's for sure.
Yep, we do. Gallon patience.
Have to believe in the process.
Absolutely. Okay. When we accept the moments that arise, instead of trying to deny them, we can find the message.
Yeah, who wrote this book? This is a great... Whoever wrote this, she must be really brilliant. But that is... yeah, that's so true. Because how many times does something happen and you're like, this is not what I want to be happening. So we're angry, you know, or impatient, or we've got an attitude. You know, and it's kind of a little hilarious because it's like, who do we think we are? Like we run the world? Like,
right, exactly.
Like, there's traffic. How dare there be traffic when the queen is going to work? You know, yeah. So if you could get over yourself and learn to just accept what is happening because that's what's happening, then you might be able to say, what can I get out of this moment that's happening? You know?
Absolutely.
So maybe if it's traffic, you might be listening to our brilliant podcast right now.
There you go.
You know, you could be learning something.
Right. Using the time wisely. You talked about in your book how you might be being prevented from, you know, going somewhere and something happening. So just be grateful that it's not you that's causing the traffic jam, and you know, wish safe travels to the people who are traveling. And you even talked about how, you know, you had happened to be working from home that day that 9/11 happened, you know. And so, you know, there's always when I get upset, like with traffic and stuff like that, because Lord knows there's a lot of it around here in Maryland, that's what I try to refocus on and just say, okay, obviously, I'm not meant to be there right now. Let me just, you know, calm. And I have to do that a lot because, like I said, the traffic around here, either the traffic or, like, you know, I'll be sitting at a light and, like, the moment the light turns green, like, I haven't even had a chance to take my foot from the brake to the gas and somebody behind me is laying on the horn. It's like, damn, can I have a chance to just, like, my reflexes get going? I mean, shit, I'm 50, you know? I'm a little slower.
I need a minute. I know what you mean, but see, you could always flip that and you could be like, wow, that person behind me, they must really have a difficult life.
I ain't there yet, Trish.
I'm giving you a little drop, okay? I'm just kidding. Because I know that feeling. It's like, what the hell is wrong with them?
Right.
But then after that, what the hell is wrong with them? You could be like, you know what? I wish them freedom, alignment, and effortless.
Well, love and light, motherfucker.
If you were to think about it, right? And right. You were that person who every mm-hmm. time the light turned green, you felt the need to honk like a maniac, the person right. in front of you.
Right.
You probably needed some meds or something, right?
Right.
You probably need some health care.
You know. Some mental health care. That I'm gonna, you know what? I'm gonna carry around a box of your books in my car, and when
you get pissed, just throw one at someone.
Just when they beep at me, I'm gonna put the car in park. I'm gonna get one of the books. I'm gonna roll, let them roll down the window. I'll be like, "Here you go." Like, what is this? Read it when you have, because obviously you got a fucking problem beeping at me like that. So you need to read this book. I'm just saying, you know. Then I get your book, then that helps you because I buy a bunch of your books and that's getting you closer to your million book goal.
There you go. I'll be like, I only need 999,000.
I'm saying, I think I probably got room in my car if I lay the back seats down. I could probably get maybe 500, 1,000 books back there. I'm just saying.
But listen, you can't throw them at people like bricks because that is not.
You know,
you can't start throwing them like hockey pucks and like flinging them at people.
Yeah.
You can't weaponize my books.
Well, damn, that takes all the fun out of it. Okay. So why do you say in your book that we have to give ourselves permission to dream?
Ah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Girl, that's some real stuff right there. So I think, you know, when we're kids, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully if we were in a healthy home, right? Because some right. children are, you know, getting abused as soon as they get out the womb, right?
Right.
But for hopefully most of us, you grew up in a home where there was kind of a loving environment. And mm-hmm. when we're little, we're allowed to dream, you know, we're allowed right. to fantasize, and you know, we could be kings and queens and princesses and warriors and movie stars. You know, people ask you, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you could say right. anything. I want to be an astronaut. I want to mm-hmm. be the president, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're kind of encouraged to work on that dream muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And then mm-hmm. when you get a little older, people are like, okay, now listen.
I know I told you that. That's some bullshit. You need to go to school and get a job.
Yeah, you better get a government job. You know, make sure you have some benefits. You know, someone's saving. You know, so one day you can have a house and, you know, and they start telling right. you all of what you could really do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay.
Like, wait a minute. Why? I could be.
Now I'm just going to work at the post office and get myself a house. Okay.
Okay. That don't sound like the dream you sold me when I was a kid, but okay.
So, yeah. So I think that, you know, and maybe that was okay for a while. Maybe it's mm-hmm. still okay, you know. But mm-hmm. I think that there's a point in everybody's life where we start thinking about purpose.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, it's as you get a little older, you know.
Right.
I think the millennials maybe think about it a little bit sooner because mm-hmm. their generation just felt, to me, a little bit more expansive. Like they were kind of like the rules that we had. They were like, don't give me any rules, you know. So they
right, right.
Maybe with technology, I don't know, but it seemed like they had a little more freedom in what they were able to imagine for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of us, whatever generation we are, you know, mm-hmm. you get to a point where you're doing the day-to-day kind of mundane things of keeping a roof over your head, maintaining your relationships, your family, that kind of thing.
Right.
And you kind of forget about the whole, I want to be an astronaut, you know?
Right.
So sometimes when I talk to people about, you know, what makes you happy, because like how you say, a lot of times people, we don't even know what we are, what we like, who we are, what we want. It's helpful mm-hmm. to go back to when you were a child and right. remember the things that you enjoyed as a child, because that's kind of like before the world got hold of you, you know?
Right. And told you who you needed to be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who you were and what you needed to be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah, we kind of have to reactivate that dream muscle. say, okay, mm-hmm. when I was a kid, I know for me, I love nature. I love right. being, you know, in the grass and the trees, whatever. Mm-hmm. So now, like, I've been able to, you know, take up hiking and find people to hike with. Because it just grounds me. So I don't have to go, you know, throw right. books at people. Because I have some hot chalk.
Listen, you have your methods. I have mine, okay?
But yeah, honestly, Audra, it was so terrifying. It was right. so scary to mm-hmm. think, you know, I've always had this kind of 9-to-5, go to school life.
Right.
To think about, okay, well, suppose I did it differently. Like,
right.
How would that work?
Mm-hmm. What does that even look like?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's always, what if I fail? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, that's the big thing. How many of us just don't even try to live our dreams, even take small steps toward it, because we're just like, what if I fail? Well,
right.
Well, and one of the things you said in your book is that you're going to be successful, you have to become comfortable with failure.
So. Yeah. And you got to get over what other people think of you. You know, I, mm-hmm. in this blog that I was writing recently too, and it's in the book too, it's like, what goes on in your head about me is mm-hmm. none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you Absolutely. Can think whatever you want about me. There's no way yep. for me to control what you're thinking in your head.
Right. Absolutely.
I've had exes like that. Control what I was thinking in my head. I was like, dude, get out my head. You right. have no access to this real estate.
Right. You know, this, all mine.
My domain. Yeah.
Right.
And everybody else's is their domain too.
Right.
So all I could do is just, you know,
do my best. You.
My authentic self, mm-hmm. you know, to figure out who that person is and then to express that person as much as I'm able to.
Yep.
Because I know people got jobs and stuff. You can't just be rolling right. up your authentic self.
Right? You even said that in your book. You're like, now look, don't go quitting your job tomorrow. Disclaimer.
Or rolling up at the job with your, you know, door knocking earrings and you set a lock or whatever.
Like, nah, sis, that ain't it. I can tell you do all that fast.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Exactly. You know. You gotta have some wisdom around this. It's
right. Just, steps. Baby steps. Oh, man. Okay. So I think one of the most wonderful, beautiful things I read in your book was where you said, our ancestors sang in the cotton fields, even under the threat of the whip. Sometimes our joy is the only thing that can't be stolen from us. Now, that hit me hard, and that can be hard for a lot of Black people to digest, because everything that's going on, you hit on that in your book, you know, George Floyd, the COVID, you know, virus, and everyone being on lockdown. It's, and then, you know, if you look at the internet, if you're on the internet, you know, it can really rob your peace when you look at things like, you know, they post these videos of George Floyd being killed mm-hmm. and of other Black men being God. Murdered and Black women being murdered. Mm. You know, it's like, how? So defend that statement. So that defend that statement, because, so you know.
Yeah, so I guess we started off talking about how anger can be very empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the reverse of that is really true, that joy can be empowering, you mm-hmm. know? And when you were saying, sometimes we're hated because our hair defies gravity or our mm-hmm. skin absorbs light and we're just beautiful.
Right.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. Like mm-hmm. sometimes people hate us because we're happy, mm-hmm. you know, or they hate us because we're not spiteful, mm-hmm. you know? Or they hate us because we're singing and dancing. And they're thinking, well, damn, I've been trying to kill you for 400 years. Mm-hmm. And you're out here singing and dancing. And, you know,
right.
Looking like you're having a good time. Like, why aren't you letting me destroy you?
And looking young while we doing it, while y'all look like some old ass jack-o'-lanterns.
Girl.
That have been left out.
That's terrible.
You know it's true, though. They age like a freaking jack-o'-lantern. You cut them things, and 2-3 days later, they're all shrunken in and everything, and everything they done tried to do to us, and we still look good.
there's some of that. I mean, we do age well. This has been a nice thing to realize as you get, like, you know, because we're around the same age. Mm-hmm. As you get a little older, it's like, ooh, thank you, Lord.
Right.
yeah but yeah, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, to me, joy is where it's at. Mm-hmm. You know, we all want to be happy, right?
Like,
if you ask somebody, what do you want out of life? Mm-hmm. At the end, you know, the core of the answer is always going to be happiness. Mm-hmm. But then, mm-hmm. It's like, well, how do I get to be happy? How many cars do I have to get for that? How much money do I need for that? You know, mm-hmm. what I mean?
But it's right.
It's not in things.
It's not in things. Because if that was the case, all these rich people out here would not be on drugs and alcohol and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, I love me some Cardi B.
That ratchet. Well, I was that part of the book. I was like, why does she love? Okay, whatever. You claim a child as your daughter. I'm like, why?
But I'm adopting her.
Why? Yes.
Oh, I think I.
She's
well,
so ratchet. She's so ratchet. I mean, I guess she's just authentically who she is. But whatever.
A hard worker. I think she is smart. Mm-hmm. I think she is talented, and I think she is authentic. So you might say, "Oh my God," you know. She's just a hot mess, but she's, mm-hmm. I think that's just, you know.
She's authentically a hot mess.
Well, she hasn't changed herself to pretend to be who you think she should be, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not for nothing, she sat down with Joe Biden. She sat mm-hmm. down with Bernie Sanders. Like, she mm-hmm. has interviewed candidates. She's political.
Okay.
But she popped into my head because we were talking about happiness, and you know, I enjoyed watching her little I shouldn't say little, you know, it was her marriage, but they would, you know, they would post things like their cars and, you know, their mm-hmm. mansion and all this stuff, and it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, you have all of those things, but well, I can't say she's not happy. I guess I'm just thinking because they filed for divorce, you know.
Well, something was going on there, so, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah. We can go back to talk about Oprah.
Yeah, no, I don't like her either. Let's move on. Move on.
So who do you like? So look, now I'm interviewing you. So who do you like as far as
India Ari?
Okay, we there. Like her. Obama, do you like her? Okay, never mind. Another conversation.
I read her book. I'll say that. Yeah, let's just move on.
Okay. Look, I'm gonna call you. I'm calling you later.
Like, what do you
I need to know. I got questions.
Okay, I got answers. So what is one aha moment you had when you wrote this book?
I mean, I feel like the biggest aha moment was the amount of time I felt like I was not writing the book. You know, I guess in the book I talk about being in the zone, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that that's a good way to kind of identify your passions sometimes, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, when you're doing something and time passes and you don't even realize, like, oh my God, like 7 hours have passed.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Or I'm mm-hmm. working and it's like Memorial Day and I didn't even know it was a holiday, you know, like, what day is it, you know?
Right.
So Yeah, for me, the biggest aha moment was that I felt at times I wasn't writing. Like, it was just like, it was coming out of me, but it was like coming through me. Mm-hmm. It made me finally understand, I think, when you see celebrities get on stage and they're like, mm-hmm. I thank God. And it's like, what? You got 18 girlfriends and you smoke weed all day long. You're thanking God. You know? But I think I understand now that the talent doesn't feel like it resides in you.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. when you get to a certain level, it just feels like it's flowing through you. Mm-hmm. So it belongs mm-hmm. to a larger power than
right.
you.
Right. Nikola yeah. Tesla said that. He said that all the ideas are out there and you just have to, because, you know, people would ask him how he came up with all these brilliant ideas about electricity. And he said, I didn't come up with them. They were just in the universe and I just made myself open to them. So, you know, there's always that train of thought.
Yeah.
Because I'm that way when I write my book. Sometimes when I'm writing a story and I get in that zone and stuff just drops down onto the page and I go back and read, because I'll always go back and reread what I wrote the day before I continue the story. And it's like, oh, mm-hmm. wow, I wrote that.
Like, that's good. Who did that? You know?
Right. It's like uh-huh. this alter ego that just kind of takes over. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Mm-hmm. So where can readers find your books? Because you also have another book called Chocolate Souffle, which you wrote. It was a love story about a woman who has sickle cell anemia and her kind of struggle to find someone who, you know, accepts her because she's very attractive, but she has this disease and she's worried about finding a man who can, you know, love her in addition to her beauty, but for also with the disease. So where can readers find your books?
Yeah. So everything is on Amazon. Of course, I would love for you to visit my website. And you can access everything there as well, along with, I have a free downloadable ebook. It's a guide to self-care.
Okay.
And you would also be able to access my weekly inspirational blog.
Okay.
So my website is honeybutterflies.com. Mm-hmm. And it's spelled a little funky because, you know, I got issues. So it's honey butter, FLYZ, mm-hmm. like zebra.com. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go straight to the books page, you could do honeybutterflies.com/books.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where you can find all my stuff. I'm active on Instagram as well.
Okay.
So I'm usually on there every day. So my Instagram is vegan_honeybutterflies, so honey butter mm-hmm. FLYZ. Mm-hmm. And if you go on my website, you can also get access to my YouTube because I blog.
Ah.
And then I also do my vlogs and
okay.
Interviews. And then I was telling you I'm working on compiling some of the video with some audio and launching my podcast as well. Mm-hmm. But I do have news for you. I have news. I don't think I've
what is that?
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Okay. So next week is 11/11/2020. And I don't know if you're into numerology at all.
A little bit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What does 11, it mean?
11/11 is kind of this law of attraction.
Right.
Number. Usually when you see repeaters, it's kind of, there's a thought mm-hmm. around it that it's a way for the universe to speak to you, you know, mm-hmm. or for God mm-hmm. to speak to you because they can't just like call you on the phone, right?
Right. Well, I mean, they could if they really wanted to. That's a whole other story.
I know, but then you end up in an institution and it's just a whole problem. So.
Like, girl, wait a minute, I'm on the phone with God. Stop texting me.
Something a little more subtle.
Yeah, 11/11 is one of my good friends. Her favorite number is 11/11. Yeah.
Yeah. So next week, 11/11, I'm launching a new book. It's really a companion journal to
Thinking
Outside the Chrysalis. Mm-hmm. But I named it 12 Steps to Mind-Blowing Happiness. A journal of insights, quotes, and questions to juice up your journey.
Awesome.
I just love that title. Every time I say it, I'm like, I want the mind blowing. I want the juiciness. I want all of that. And if I could get it in 12 steps, that's what I'm talking about.
There you go.
Yeah. So I'm so excited about it. Because like some of the things that you were talking about, like how do I really get to, you know, how do I get to know myself? You know, how do I really create a vision board that's going to be more meaningful? You know, the Thinking Outside the Chrysalis, A Black Woman's Guide to Spreading Her Wings is fantastic, but not everybody is like a reader.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Or not everybody wants to read a whole book, or maybe doesn't want to read a whole memoir, you know? So this is a nice way of being a little bit more about the journaling and less about, it still has the lessons in there, but not as, not as much text.
Right.
Get to it.
And so this will be out on November 11th. And on your website as well as Amazon.
Yes. And you know what? I'm hosting my launch party on the 11th at 5:55, of course. So we can manifest.
There you go. Can manifest.
So there's a link, you know, where if anybody wants to sign up for that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yay. Well, I think I'll be there. Make sure I'm there. So as you probably can tell, we have come to the end of our show, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and talents with us today and for reaching out to me, asking to be on my show. I was booked and I was like, you know what? I'm going to make room for the sister because I feel like we need to talk about this book. So thank you for sharing all of your knowledge. Oh,
thank you so much. I had so much fun.
Okay, see, I told you it was going to be fun. But thank you again for all of your knowledge and your wisdom. And please, people, pick up this book, especially my Black sisters out there. There's just a wealth of information. It's just very freeing to read. And so y'all know how I do, Booz and Bros. At the end of my show, I always leave you with a quote. And this time, it is from the late, great, and gone way too soon actor Chadwick Boseman. And he said, "When I attain before God at the end of my life, I would hope that I would not have a single bit of ability left and could say, I used everything you gave me." Until next time, y'all, grab a book and read, and I am out. You've been listening to Between the Reads. I'm your host, Audra Russell. Thanks for tuning in. This week's episode was brought to you by loyal Patreon supporters, romance author D.L. White, whose books you can find at booksbydlwhite.com, Xanthine's All Natural Products, which you can find at xanthines.com, that's xanthines.com, and by the ultimate in urban literature, Paper Chase Publications, which you can find at paperchasepublications.com. Tune in next week for another great episode.